Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Joan Newcombe. She has a novel called The Tapestry of Time, which we're going to discuss, which she refers to as taking us out of linear being to see how we each vibrationally affect our realities. Joan's been involved in quite a few different things. She's clairvoyant and been involved in clairvoyant development. She's interested in meditation and spiritual healing. And I think I would be correct in saying that her main interest is in helping people with their personal growth and spiritual awareness. We will soon find out. Welcome to the program, Joan.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Good, yes. Did I give you the right introduction there?
Oh, certainly, yes. And there's lots of other things that I do, and I'm happy to talk about them as well. But I believe that I sent you off my book, so that's a wonderful place to start.
Yes. Certainly would like to discuss some other aspects of your interests. Now, I gather that your tapestry of time is about traveling around the world, and I've heard it mentioned about time travel. Now, is that indeed what you've introduced into the book?
Well, that is definitely an element of it. If you think of the idea of time being a tapestry rather than a linear experience, we in our physical bodies experience time linearly from start to finish. And
yeah.
In this book, it introduces the concept that there's other beings that don't live time linearly, so they kind of weave in and out of our lives, but not necessarily to them. It's not necessarily, you know, age progressed in the same way.
So your book is presumably based on actual experiences. So although you've put them in the form of a novel, the content is actually something that you believe in.
I do believe there is definitely a fictionalized aspect. And the interesting thing, however, from when I first initially wrote the book, and it went through, you know, many years of rewriting and drafts before it became published, is that our conscious awareness of things such as quantum physics has come up. So it's much more in everyone's everyday reality, the idea of parallel universes and the reality of, you know, time, you know, being circular or spiral. So the idea that you know, someone could have a physical form that moves through the experience of time differently is now much more plausible than when I was first playing around with it. So.
So you've mentioned parallel universes there. What do you think the point is, or the working between our universe and a parallel universe? What is it all about?
Well, I believe that we are a multidimensional being, that we are greater than just our physical form, and our awareness is greater than our physical form. I used to say that we all had the ability to connect to the cosmic internet, you know, communicate and access the information of the cosmic internet. And you could say the cosmic internet is God, or it's the universe, or it's the Akashic records, or whatever. But now I'm coming to believe that we are, at our essence, the cosmic internet. And that's, I think, the consciousness shift that's happening right now. So if you can understand that we are an infinite being, and our physical form is the one with a limited perspective in it, you know, going from, you know, start to finish in an age-progressed way. But as an infinite being, we are experiencing an infinite number of realities. Just for this particular physical form in this linear lifetime, a way of explaining it is that from the moment you're born and every time that you decide to go left instead of right, a part of you splits off and actually does go right, and that means it goes on to have a whole parallel lifetime going in a different direction. So parallel may not be the greatest image for it, but that's the common usage of the word. So So if you imagine that's happened from the moment you're born, how many parallel lives have been started and are being lived, and how many parallel histories you have. And then in front of you, you have an equal number of parallel lives and histories. And the interesting thing is that you can actually shift into a parallel reality or parallel universe, which will look exactly the same as where you were moments before, but you'll be having a completely different experience with it. And so you can shift yourself out of having a bad mood, out of being stuck, out of having an insolvable problem to an instantaneous solution. You can heal illnesses that way, and all of that's totally possible now.
That is a very interesting thought. I never considered that before. So are you saying that there is an identical person, if we can call it that, to us in the parallel universe, and that we occasionally move into it without realizing that we have, and we can experience something a little bit better maybe than what was due to us on our path on the earth? Is that the gist of it?
It's kind of the gist of it. I believe that you are the same consciousness, and it's consciousness, you know, with a capital C, and the consciousness encompasses all of it. And so it's like changing lanes on the freeway. You know, if you're on a multi-lane freeway and you're stuck behind traffic in one lane, if you shift over to another lane, you'll have a completely different experience. And it's not necessarily the left side lane, depending on which side of the pond we're talking on here. You know, in the U.S., it's on the left side is usually the fast lane. But often I find it faster to zip over to the right-hand lane, and I get their loads faster. So you can traverse through life the same way. And we actually, I believe that we do this in multiple times without even being conscious of it. So it's simply becoming consciously aware.
Right. So as far as your book is concerned, then, is it a whole series of stories of people traveling between this universe and the parallel universe, or what other areas does it go into?
Well, actually, this has actually a linear story plot, at least from one of the characters. It's based on a man whose name is Paul, and he's an architect based in Seattle. And he runs into this woman when he graduates from college back in Washington, D.C., and, you know, instantly falls in love with her, and she disappears after a weekend. And then 10 years later, he runs into her again, and she had profoundly affected his life, you know, 10 years ago, and she doesn't remember who he is. And then she's around for about 3 weeks, and then Mount St. Helens erupts, and she disappears again. And this happens several times, and usually associated with disasters. In Washington, D.C., it was Hurricane Andrew at the time. And eventually, it finds out how she is vibrationally affecting her surroundings, and there's other aspects to the plot why she doesn't remember him at certain times. So it's a love story as well, where the two people love each other, and one of the conflicts is that she can't stay put. And of course, there's a lot more depth to the story as well. So I didn't really go too much into parallel universes at that time. That would be in the current novel that's in the works. This is the beginning of a trilogy, so goes through several generations.
Do you actually mean that you're writing three books which are going to come all at the same time?
Well, no. This book that's already published is the first, and there's a second one that's already written. It's just being final edited, and then the third one is was completely written in my head and is now being completely rewritten in my head. So that's the progress of the trilogy.
All right. So is the third one Adventures in Density and Effort?
No, that actually Adventures in Density and Effort is my blog and also my radio show. It's a lighthearted look at life on playground Earth, and that's really my perspective of our physical reality. If you realize that we are these infinite beings, and on an energetic level, We are light energy. We're not contained by time or space. And physical reality, the molecules themselves are dense. So, the more dense they are, the more physical they seem. And life is really more of a playground. It's adventures and density and effort land as opposed to some big lesson to be learned, because we are infinite beings, and so at that aspect, we are also infinitely knowledgeable, and it's really learning about how to navigate in our physical forms. So it's our body's perspective that we don't know anything, or that there's something that we need to learn, and I guess the only thing we really need to learn is how to navigate our bodies.
Right. So as we're spiritual beings, mm-hmm. what is the purpose of one life on the earth? Hello?
Well,
we've lost you for a minute there.
Oh, no, you hadn't lost me, but I thought your question wasn't finished yet.
Oh, yeah, no, it's just a simple one. As I say, just to repeat it, since we're spiritual beings, what is the purpose of our life on earth? Well, you said it's to learn things, but where do we go from there?
It's actually not to learn things. That's the old belief system, is that there is something that we're here to learn, and our different lifetimes are like lessons in school.
Yeah.
And what I have come to realize that there isn't anything we need to learn, because we already know everything. And
yeah.
it's really the fun is to navigate in this physical form. It's like, why does one go swimming? It's because it's fun to paddle about in the water. So we get very bogged down in the idea of life purpose, and that we have to fulfill our life purpose. And I really think at our essence, our life purpose is to create and be creative, because our creativity is our spiritual language. So whatever anyone feels creative at, and it may not seem creative at the time, people might not consider cleaning a house creative, but I find my creative energy turns on when I'm doing it. So mm-hmm. anything like that enhances our experience of our spiritual language.
Yes. In that sense of us being really spiritual beings, do you believe that we have a whole series of lives, that we come and go from the spiritual dimensions?
I used to do past life readings. I still can, to humor some people. So the whole idea of past lives and karma, it's a very linear perspective. Then I shifted with something I read in one of Marianne Williamson's books, where mm-hmm. it was that all the lifetimes are being lived at once. And I thought, since as spirit we're not constrained by time or space, it totally makes sense that, the Pope could be experiencing a lifetime here in Rome and simultaneously be having a lifetime as a harlot in Israel, 2,000 years ago. So you could be, at a spiritual level, you could be having a simultaneous experience of it, which is kind of hard for us to understand when we're in our personalities and in our physical form in this linear existence. But outside of that, it's totally possible. I'm now believing that we are one consciousness having all these multiple experiences.
Yes.
And so, and that's also how we're all connected. So, I'm having the same experience as a woman who is basket weaving in Africa, and as someone who is ice fishing in Alaska, and all of these lifetimes are all occurring at the same time, and they're all interweaving at the same time, and I'm an infinite being just having a tremendous fun experiencing all of it.
But it's a shame that we don't realize that we're having tremendous fun, isn't it?
Well, that's the thing. From our physical perspective, it's like we're pretty sensitive to pain, and we feel powerless, like the world is happening to us. But from an infinite perspective, from a high spiritual perspective, the more difficult it is, the more challenging it is, the more fun it is, because we're infinitely capable. And so, an athlete wouldn't choose to go on a lazy little walk. You know, Lance Armstrong wouldn't ride a tricycle around the block. You know, he's having fun going through the Pyrenees right now. So, so from that perspective, you know, we create very, very difficult lifetimes or very difficult challenges, and there's a higher aspect of ourselves that's having a ball while we're suffering.
Right. Would you call your higher aspect, as some people do, your higher self?
It's kind of, I'd say, my larger self, my higher self, my expanded self, myself as spirit, myself as my myself as essence.
Yes.
I use a lot of different languages or words, I've used a lot of different words to describe it, to also help expand people's awareness of what that is. Because higher self and lower self, even greater self and small self, you know, have sort of implications that aren't necessarily accurate.
Yes, yes. The general idea is correct, though, that we do have this. Well, perhaps higher consciousness is even a better expression. Right now, you believe, apparently, that we're heading for a great leap in consciousness, and there is a lot of talk at the time, which you must be aware of, that we are heading for the end of this solar cycle, and that will result in what some people call an ascension. Now, what is your view about that?
I have been getting all sorts of input from lots of different people. I've interviewed several experts, so quote-unquote experts on 2012. And what I see is happening is I'd say, acceleration of collective consciousness. And it's not focused on a particular date because it's already happening. We're already in the accelerated field, and we're experiencing it individually. One of the things that we're experiencing, a lot of us are experiencing, is that whatever we thought was solid and real is disintegrating. And for some people, it was the banking system. For some people, it was, you know, real estate or the stock market. For other people, it's their spiritual belief system, or, you know, if they were grounded in their marriage, suddenly that blows up in their face. So, and for other people, it's certain aspects of their personality or their identity. You know, if they were very caught up in their job, then suddenly they've been laid off. So So the other thing that I believe is happening is what I would describe as the 100th monkey syndrome. And there's actually a true experiment of these scientists were studying a particular breed of monkey in the South Pacific. And they were observing these monkeys, and this one monkey started washing fruit. And monkeys don't teach each other how to do things. They observe, you know, monkey see, monkey do. They observe, and then they copy them. So this one monkey was washing fruit, and these other monkeys started washing, one by one, started picking up on it and washing fruit themselves. Well, it got to about 100 monkeys when spontaneously all the monkeys on all the other of the same breed on these other Pacific islands with no direct contact started washing fruit. So the theory that, about these sort of transference along like a genetic level of knowledge, and when you get to a tipping point, and you know, 100 monkeys for this breed was a tipping point, then the knowledge gets transferred to everyone. So if you imagine, you know, for quite a few decades now, a good 50, 60 years, we've been in this sort of new age progress, and people, you know, so it's now become commonplace for people to know about auras and chakras. And when I was started doing aura readings and chakra healings 30 years ago, you know, nobody knew what it was. And yet, you know, it's been actually in the belief system for thousands of years if you're in India. So it's that enough people are aware of, you know, higher consciousness, the light, that there's a tipping point happening, and I believe that once we tip over, everyone is going to benefit. Everyone's going to feel a lot better. You know, even the most conservative is going to be more liberal, is my personal belief. And, you know, and I've been thinking it'll happen spontaneously. It may, when you look back on it, be spontaneous. But it's also that people don't have to try really hard towards enlightenment. It's going to happen to them whether they see it coming or not.
Yeah. That's interesting, the fact that it can creep up on people like that. But I suppose if you look back at the last perhaps 10, 20, 30 years, you can see, as you've hinted there, that the level of people's consciousness is just that much greater, and they take more easily to what you might call the New Age concepts.
Yeah, they don't. It's become sort of everyday language, so that they don't even know that, you know, they may be talking about something New Agey.
Yeah, it's a great thing, obviously, if we are becoming, well, you said quite correctly, and I believe this, that we are one consciousness. But if that consciousness is rising up, then again, quite correctly, it would eventually affect everyone, and that would be a marvellous thing, because it would take us out of this rather dark period that we've, well, we're still going through it up to a certain extent, but one can't fail to notice how many changes are going on.
Yes, and you know, you just helped me have a revelation there, because as you were talking, I was thinking of my experience. When I'm feeling integrated as spirit, when I am feeling aligned or enlightened, I am, capital I, capital A-M,
yeah.
You know, I am an expanded being. And at that level, I am a very high vibration.
Yes.
So to express it as we're all collectively raising in vibration is actually talking from a body level, body personality level point of view. So the density physical form is going, oh, the vibration is raising. Whereas from a spiritual perspective, it's integrating. It is coming more into physical form. And even from my early energy teaching, it was the body was having to adjust. The body was needing to ground more or ground differently in order to handle the higher vibration that was happening. So it's not exactly an up or down, but it's an integration that's happening.
Yeah. Do I correctly understand that you believe in this period that people are being called upon to do what they came into life for as part of all this lifting of the consciousness levels?
You know, that's how I've been saying things, and that, you know, it kind of sounds like I'm contradicting myself for when I was earlier saying, well, our only purpose is to create. But what I notice, I do intuitive readings, spiritual consultations, and mystic mentorship. So I work with a lot of people who come to me who've been laid off or who are in secure jobs, but their souls are calling them to leave, so to speak, and so. I do believe that as this integration is happening, we are feeling called to be more in integrity with the essence of who we are. And so we're not, either we're not content to be in jobs that don't allow us to use our spiritual creativity, or we're being laid off from jobs that we're not really in integrity with. So for instance, a couple different people. One person I know was an architect, but they were working for a firm that they'd actually quit 15 years ago when they were in their 20s and more idealistic. They'd quit it because they hadn't approved of the way they were going. And then 15 years later, got hired and was working designing, you know, buildings for developers who were not very ethical people, and got laid off. Well, they spent 11 months being laid off and sending out resumes for the exact same kind of job. And they got hired again in a slightly different job, but it was the same misfit where there was, this time it was the culture of the job. There was an abusive person there that was making everyone's life horrible, and the upper management was ignoring it. But I felt it was still the universe telling them that they shouldn't be doing what they were doing and they needed to go in another direction. So 8 months later, they got laid off again. And this happened to people where they get laid off multiple times now. And it's because the universe is saying, don't go there. Or a woman I know who was laid off about 3 or 4 years ago from a particular bank that got that collapsed and has been unemployed for the last 3 years, and she keeps sending out resumes for other banking positions. And I said, well, what would you really rather be doing? And she came up with all her limitations for why she kept doing this. And actually, her shift was pretty simple. She said it would be more fun to work at medical administration. It's like, well, why don't you send your resume there? So it doesn't mean that you need to, you know, quit the corporate world altogether and go live on an island and raise goats or something. Though that suggestion came out of the blue, so somebody out there must be feeling called to do that. But it could just mean shift yourself in a different direction. And the other thing is to acknowledge what your talents are, what makes your heart sing, and go in that direction.
Yes. You're quite right about this question of people perhaps being unable to continue in something they aren't meant to do and then perhaps being pointed in a different direction. I can tell you very quickly that my best friend some many years ago tried two or three different businesses, including a garden center, and each one of them went bankrupt. And in the end, he lost his house and I think most of his sort of wealth. And he had to start from the beginning again. And through that, he started or had more time for his spiritual work. And today, he runs groups, gives talk, healing, meditation. And I think he's really following the spiritual path that they wanted him to do. But it took a little bit of work to get him on it.
Yes, exactly. That's a brilliant example. That's exactly what's going on for everyone nowadays in some way or shape or form.
Yeah, and indeed, he's not the only one I've heard about who has suddenly found they've been pointing in a different direction. Now, you've said that you are a clairvoyant. Do you use that in your efforts to help people with their personal growth? Because presumably, you can contact people that have passed on.
Yes, I was trained as a clairvoyant reader, so I went through 5 years of training, and it took me about 20 years to realize I was naturally empathic. So what I do now is I use a combination of abilities, and I developed my present technique from doing a lot of phone readings, and I also do readings on the radio and things like that. And so I tune into the people's energy through the sound of their voice, and saying their name, or saying their name and a topic like, you know, their love life, or, you know, their career, or you know, the name of their spouse, that I will give me visual images about both them and, you know, their interaction with another person, place, or thing. And I can also talk to people who've passed. Unlike John Edward, who opens up to the non-physical and has, you know, oh, okay, I'm, you know, talking to I'm aware of a man who's passed. He'll start with talking to the dead person as opposed to the live people. I prefer to have the live person say the deceased's name, and then I can tune into what's going on with them.
Is it not the case sometimes that people have problems in their lives here because of their links or attachment, or because they won't let go with people that they have known on the earth that have passed on? Do you sort of have to deal with that type of problem?
Not often. I think we can stay very attached to our experience of someone while they were alive. And the thing is just because they've died doesn't mean they don't exist anymore. I find them, it's like having a bad mobile phone connection. They're easier to talk to but harder to hear. But they're still there. It's just that the relationship has transformed. So, and that can actually be beneficial. If you didn't get along with your mother and she died, She might be a lot easier to be with now.
Like
her, there could be aspects of her personality have now dissolved. So at least it certainly aren't as important to her anymore because the physical form and the emotions that are all tied up with it are gone. So we get stuck on we'll get stuck on the way relationships were. We'll get stuck on memories or past experiences. And the thing is that even if we get healing work done, often we'll reset ourselves back to that original stuckness by telling the story again. So, you know, you could do a lot of work on having an abusive parent, as for an example, but if you wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and tell the story over and over again in your head, you're re-abusing yourself. So it's not really the other person's fault or the entanglement with the other person. It's our own entanglement with the story.
Right. Now, I know you have mentioned somewhere about soulmates. What are they?
Well, I believe that we have lots of soulmates out there. There's not just one person who's meant to be with you, or not necessarily your one twin flame. But as far as romantic soulmates, there's one person who's ready to be with you at whatever part of your journey. But you can have soulmates that are children or cousins or best friends, and you know, and they can come and go in your life, and you can have multiple soulmates. So, you know, just because you're passionate with your child doesn't mean that you're never going to have another husband, kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So, I believe that there's the soulmates are. There's an energetic familiarity, there's an energetic compatibility, there's an effortless heart connection. Although I've also known soulmates that are right pain and are very difficult and bring up all the, you know, stuff to work on. So, because sometimes mirrors aren't very comfortable to live with. So, it's a variety of things, but, I think connecting with a soulmate and an experience with a soulmate, it feels very unique and special. I think then sometimes we'll idealize the concept so then we won't recognize that we're already with our soulmate. It's just, you know, we've been married to them since high school and we're running in ruts. We're running along the old concepts or the original energetic contract that we came together with, you know, when we were 18, 19, or 20, and we're now in our 40s or 50s, and it's time to update things.
Yes, I agree with you. Now, I know that you're into meditation. Is that something that you give your clients to do to help their spiritual awareness? Because I think it's generally considered that unless you can find space for yourself and a quiet moment and perhaps do a meditation, you're going to find it difficult to connect with your higher self.
Yes, I teach energy transformation classes, and I also, when I do mystic mentorship coaching, it's life coaching with a mystical twist, and that gives me permission to give them energy techniques. I no longer call it meditation per se. But you're correct. It's creating and finding a quiet time, which doesn't have to be hours a day. I was very locked into one meditation technique. I was a meditation teacher for, you know, 20, 30 years, whatever it's been now. And and you know, I had to meditate, you know, hours every day. And I've since lightened up about that, and I've become more flexible because it was a little bit like having been gone to Royal Ballet School and being trained as a ballet dancer, and you come out the other end as an athlete in a sense, but only in one form of dance. And I found that there's lots of forms of dance out there, and they're equally as valid, and some of them are more effective. Or, you know, for instance, I'm mixing my metaphors now. I'm thinking in terms of energy. Jane Fonda, who started the whole popularity of the whole aerobics movement, says that she gets as much of a workout than a half an hour of yoga now. You know, there are different different techniques and some less time-consuming or less ritualistic that are as effective. And different, you can, so out there, there's, you know, there's as many different people. You may have had, you know, not a good experience with meditation or have never tried it at all. And there's one that's out there that will fit you. And yeah. The point, I guess the basic point is that about meditation is that it's turning within to get in touch with the essence of who you are. Because you're not going to find it out there in someone else. You know, other people can give you an example or give you inspiration, and books and films and videos and whatever can give you inspiration on what it might be like to be in touch with you. But the only way you'll get in touch with you is to turn within to get in touch with you. That's what your physical form is. It's your focal point.
Right. Do you have a favorite meditation that you would recommend for people?
Actually, not anymore.
You don't, huh?
And as I said, it's kind of hard I'm currently teaching a new class series, and it's requiring me to update all my old techniques. And it's been the last, five years or so have been extremely uncomfortable as I've had to let go of my old standards. And, and it's including concepts, world concepts, you know, of everybody in the world needs to know how to ground, you know, and it has to be this particular way. And now I'm finding that's the thing that's been solid and real for me that's had to dissolve.
Right. Now, I see that apart from some of your claims to fame, one we haven't spoken about is healing. What are your thoughts about healing? Is that mainly interest in self-healing or for people to learn how to heal others or both?
Well, and that's my original training was in spiritual meditation or psychic meditation and spiritual healing, spiritual meditation, psychic healing, sort of interchangeable, really. And when I taught people meditation, it was really a way of healing themselves. And when I taught people healing, it was a particular technique for helping cleanse people's auras. And now I steer away from the word healing because it implies that there's something wrong that needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
And my current, what I'm integrating now into my practice is something called matrix energetics, which brings in a whole quantum physics aspect. So the way I look now at my old techniques were kind of like classical physics, and the up-to-date techniques and the things I'm upgrading is like quantum physics. So when you work with quantum physics, and when you work with like matrix energetics, you have to show up for the session with a completely open mind, a beginner's mind in some way, and you can't view that this person, you know, has something wrong with them and needs to be fixed, because then you'll create the space that there's something wrong with them and they need fixing. Whereas with the whole quantum physics matrix energetics, you're looking at infinite possibilities for transformation. And then within that, you can work with, maybe they're dealing with a trauma or an old injury, and you can time travel back to before that injury or trauma happened and reset the physical and emotional state to before it ever happened. You can two-point them to a parallel universe where it did never happen, and they'll be able to, it doesn't negate, you know, something that they've lived through, but they can no longer be burdened by the experience of being a victim or a trauma survivor. They can be lifted to a different experience through two-pointing them to a parallel universe where it never happened.
Wow.
So it's fascinating, and it's a whole, just a whole new way of being with transformation.
Yeah. I mean, do you time travel yourself?
Not in the way my books describe,
no.
But I have, in a sense, time traveled back to traumatic things that have happened in my past and stepped in as I am now. to, you know, stand up to my father, for instance, or to make a shift so that I then experience a different result than originally what happened when, you know, I was by myself and there was nobody around to to defend me, so to speak. So it's so that I try and travel in that way. You can also time travel forward, and what I've done rather than that is I've communicated to my future self. So when I've gone through difficult times, I've communicated to the person I am in 10 years who's already lived through this to get advice on how to get through it. So so the awareness of the liquidity of time is very useful.
That's an intriguing subject. Does that mean that when you time travel back to some incident in your own life, and you mentioned something to do with your father, do you actually, as it were, walk into the same incident, but then have the opportunity to talk about it as though it was happening at that very time?
Well, it's a little bit like, one important thing is to stay present when you're doing something like this, because that sounds contradictory, but it's important. So, for instance, I'm 51 now, so if I'm picking something that happened when I was 3 or something that happened when I was 14, I have to not be 3 or 14 when I go back there. I have to go back as a 51-year-old, and then the person that I'm confronting is actually a man in his 30s or 40s, so I'm older now than he was. One thing, and I have skills gained that I can talk, stand up to him and talk back to him, or put him in his place, so to speak. So it's you know, whereas at the time in the family nobody could do that. So, so it's a way of traveling and stepping yourself back into a situation, but from the empowered adult as you are now.
That's very interesting. So this aspect, evidently, from what you've said, comes up quite a lot in your book.
Not exactly. The book itself has a different. It's a different kind of time travel, whereas the one character who is nonlinear, so to speak, she weaves through time, and the main. She's also. She doesn't have free will in the way the linear humans do, so she's actually sent on assignments, and it's a very subtle thing. She's just there to help raise the vibratory level at that particular time, and then has to leave before it gets too high. So there's in the subsequent books, there's there's a particular character who is. Is half time traveler or half non-time traveler, and has free will, and it's actually the book that's not been written yet. Is the one with free will goes mucking about trying to manipulate and control things, and it all kind of blows up. Going back to the fact that we're consciousness and infinite beings, we have the highest potential that's mentioned in the book. We actually could do all the things that she can do. We just need to get out of our limited perspective.
Right. Now, you talk about us being part of one consciousness. Do you believe in God?
Well, my experience of God has transformed over time. I mean, I was raised a staunch Presbyterian, and I've got ministers in my background, and my training was actually with a Christian mystery school, and it was a blend of Eastern and Western mysticism, based on first century Christianity, and so my evolution of it was from, you know, God being this sort of biblical bearded Charlton Heston in the sky kind of thing, and it really wasn't. It wasn't the one that Jesus talked about, which was, you know, as a parental figure that you could talk to, because my father certainly wasn't. It evolved to being something that was because I've shifted my awareness from that too, but it doesn't have a gender. It doesn't even have a physical form. It's just really a shift of perspective when I connect to the expanded awareness. And I've had times where I've been connected for, you know, months at a time, and it's incredibly joyous to be integrated like that.
Yeah.
So where I'm at now, and it's been a shift of my own ego too, because, you know, if you go, you know, I am God, your ego just loves that and becomes a little Napoleon. Whereas this is more of I'm consciousness. I guess God is a hierarchical idea, and I've gone more to the idea of consciousness.
Right.
So we are consciousness. It's not, and it's like we plural are consciousness singular. And so at my essence, I'm consciousness, and it transcends any limited personality that I may identify with.
Right. So would it be correct to say that as one consciousness, we exist within the greater consciousness of this being or whatever it is that we call God?
Well, the way I'm saying it is that we are consciousness, we are consciousness, period. And the whole God is a concept, and that we're a separate consciousness within a consciousness is also a concept. I mean, you could go, okay, we're like a cell within the body, and, you know, the body's made up of a lot of cells. And that's still going from the perspective of the cell. And I'm going from the perspective of the consciousness that has cells.
Right.
You know, so from consciousness, here I am, I'm consciousness, and I have a physical form made up of all these different cells. Oh, I'm so creative. I've got a cell that, you know, makes up part of the skin cells and organ cells and hair cells, but I'm consciousness. And that's when you start to shift your awareness that you are consciousness that manifested a physical form, creating a physical world. It's much easier to get in touch with your joy.
Joan, what do you think the purpose of life is?
Well, I think it is to create. I think we are here to realize ourselves as the creators of our reality, as consciousness coming into physical form, and to just really enjoy and savor every moment.
Right. I mean, it is nice to know there is a purpose, because I think there are some people who don't believe there's any purpose at all.
Yes, and, you know, maybe that's their purpose in life, is to believe that.
Yes.
You know, it's like there's, you know, we don't all have to come into enlightenment just because we're alive at this time.
No,
you know, from an infinite being's perspective, it's as fun to be completely unenlightened. You know, if think of it as an actor, okay? Now, why would an actor, okay, I'm not pronouncing her name right, Charlize Theron, she's from, you know, South Africa, and she's this beautiful, tall, blonde, attractive actress, and she chose to take on this part called Monster, where she gained 40 pounds, and it was a true person who, like, murdered people. And why would she do that? Because it was a really juicy, challenging role for an actor. Or this other fellow whose name's Stanley Tucci, and he's just a delightful person, and we saw him play Julia Child's husband, Meryl Streep with Julia Child, and he was just a sweetheart in that. And then the next thing, he was a murderer in The Lovely Bones. It was a creepy person. And why would he do that? Well, because, you know, the more capable actor takes on the more difficult role. So we create these complicated lifetimes and these difficult personalities and these horrible family situations, and we're just chortling with glee because, you know, it's Oscar-worthy. You know, it just shows how creative we are to come up with, you know, really challenging story plots. And it shows how capable we are to have these difficulties.
Yeah. So it really tells us, I would think, that we don't have to experience everything ourselves. We can actually learn from other people.
Well, we don't have to have every experience, you know, and we don't have to feel like less than because we're not having the same experience as somebody else. We can really enjoy the experience that we're having. And even if it seems really yucky and difficult, when you attune to yourself, when you align with yourself as your expanded self, suddenly it doesn't seem so difficult anymore. When you're in agreement with your higher consciousness, your expanded self, when you're in agreement with it, suddenly everything flows much more easily.
Right. Now, Joan, I think it's about time we gave you a few minutes to give our listeners your website address, confirm whether or not they can buy your book direct from it, and also, if you give it out, your telephone number for your phone readings.
Yes, my website is joannewcomb.com. It's JoannewcomB. Let's try that again. JoannewcomB.com. JoannewcomB.com. It's most easiest way to get to my book there. If you click on the book link, you'll be able to purchase the book online. It also tells you about the other services I do, my private sessions. The homepage there has usually an up-to-date my schedule when I'm doing readings in Matrix Energetics and if I'm on radio shows and things like that, or who I'm interviewing on my radio show or doing readings or mystic mentorship. So joannewcomb.com. And my email is a little easier for me to access. I'm about to run out and go perform a wedding this afternoon, so I don't think I want my phone ringing while I'm standing up there officiating somebody's ceremony. So joan@joannewcomb.com. And there'll be a way of contacting me as well as you get to my website.
Okay, that's fine. Just in passing, are you still doing the radio?
I'm also on Facebook and Twitter. If people are search for me as Joan Newcomb, and on Twitter it's Joan Newcomb altogether.
Fine. And are you still doing your radio show?
Yes, my radio show is on Contact Talk Radio, and it's on Tuesdays, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, I think, depending on our time shifts. And there's a link to it also from my site. Also on my site, you can listen to archive shows because there's all sorts of interesting people I've talked to. If you're interested in 2012, there's about three or four people I've talked to in the last year about it.
Oh, right. Yes, I think there are a lot of people who are interested in 2012, without a doubt. Well, thank you for all that information. We've virtually come to the end of my time, and I have a minute or so left to announce next week's guest. So I must at this stage say thank you very much, Joan, for coming onto the program. It's very interesting to talk about your book and your own background, and I wish you every success for the future.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm delighted. Thank you, Joan. Right, my friends, as usual, that was an interesting guest. Next week I have Rene Jorgensen, who is a philosopher of religion, an author, a member of the International Association for Near-Death Studies, and his new book reveals evidence for God in The Light Beyond Death, and I believe his book is called The Light Behind God. So there's another interesting subject. I hope you can be with me next week, and thank you for being with me today. God bless you all. Thank you.